The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power, home of the GA Hour Football Acca.
I'm not finished yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
Welcome along to the best of 2019. This is the best GEA of 2019 brought to you by the GEA, right? So it's not the best GEA. We're not going to champion our own show like the Sunday game because I gave out about the Sunday game too much. So this is the best of the GEA in 2019 brought to you by us.
See, when you started there, I thought you were going to start saying, this is the best GEA show bar none. I don't go down that road.
What are your highlights of the year, lads? Because, like, I mean, when you look back on the championships, always... when you have a brilliant All-Ireland final, you look back on it. But then we were doing the Woolley Awards on Monday and there was a good few in the mix for Game of the Year. You know, we had Armagh versus Down. We had Armagh versus Cavan. We had Donegal-Kerry. We had the All-Ireland finals. We had Armagh versus Mayo. We had Donegal-Mayo up in Castlebar. Mm-hmm. You know, we had a lot of good games. You know, I think it was a really good football championship. We saw the game progress a little bit back, a little bit more towards kicking and offensive football. We are making progress on our championship structures. What happens next year will tell a lot about that. I think it's been a massively positive year in a lot of aspects. Obviously, a lot of stuff around governance of county boards, which we've been talking about a good bit on the show before. This has come to light this year, you know, even though it was well predictable. I think in general, though, we've had a pretty good year. The Hurling Leinster Championship was outstanding. Two unbelievable All-Ireland semi-finals. Munster Championship, a disappointment. Hurling, probably not the year it had the year before. I think football had a pretty strong year.
Yeah, well, Hurling had an unbelievable year in 2018, so yeah, I suppose it was football's turn. I think you chatted about it there when you were talking about the Woolley Awards, said that you couldn't really find Antifa Onfield controversy, which is a good thing because all the talk was about what was
no
good about
Newbridge
football
or nowhere.
That's
none
exactly
of that.
It.
I missed that little bit of controversy.
I don't really, to be honest. Personal highlights for me, I've like Mayo win the league. Mayo winning a trophy in Cork Park for the first time. I think I said it in a brilliant league final. Yeah, and I think I said it on the show at the time. It meant actually way more to myself and to Mayo people than we actually realised beforehand, and it was only when we had won it and when we saw what it meant to the players, kind of how it dawned on us how what big of an achievement it was. And then just the other one was being at that Mayo Donegal game that you mentioned. It was the best of what the Super 8s can be. It was a high octane championship game all on the line in a provincial venue that was absolutely packed and the atmosphere was fantastic. So Super 8s had, maybe there has been issues with it, but that in its best light is what it can be.
It was good because it was a knockout game though, so it was not really a good
it was an All-Ireland quarter-final. Joe McDonagh Cup outstanding this year, has to be said as well, and Laois in Hurling had a brilliant year. Football, pretty decent year as well. We beat Derry away, which is always nice. Alright, so we'll get into the best of interviews. These are the best of the people we spoke to this year. We're not going to bring, other than Cheddar, we're not going to bring any best of from ourselves or from our regular pundits because we're not like that. So it's more like the stars of the show and the best kind of stuff maybe that they have said on our show. So we're going to start off with Bernard Brogan. So this was an exclusive for us. Well, he was on the Late Late Show as well, but that doesn't count as a GA show. It's an exclusive for a GA show. And after he announced his retirement, he was a lot more relaxed than usual. And he was very honest about how he forced his way into the 26-man panel for the All-Ireland final replay.
In between the final and the replay, I was kind of saying, what am I doing here? Actually, there was a ball in one of the games before where I didn't take a shot on it, passed to the back post to O'Gara, and it says, Con would have knocked that into the back of the net. Like, and me 5 years ago, that would have been back of the net. And why am I waiting for someone for a hand pass? Trying to be the team player, and I go, that's it, I'm done. It's not after getting me into the first final. As I said, the next Saturday after the final, I went out and scored. Me and O'Gara went full forward line, and Dean, and I scored 4 points. O'Gara got a couple, and Dean got a couple, and we just ran right for 15 minutes.
Who was the three in the full back line?
I can't can't remember now. I'm going to call the note. But I said, I'm doing what Con did. Every time I got the ball, I just took on the man.
But how do you see that's the weird thing. You go to a trial under 16, like I used to play wing back. Your man might score 4, but you score 3 from play. You are being noticed.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You have to do things to get noticed. Yeah, being a team player, it'll only get you noticed if you've been a selfish, like that would have got you noticed under Pat Gilroy because that's what he wanted from you.
But yeah,
that's
it didn't
not
work
gonna,
for me.
That's
yeah.
not going to get you into the 26 by being selfless, I suppose, isn't
it? That's what I thought in the Tyrone game. I was going to come out and I'm going to say to Jim and Jay and them, give me the ball, I'll be back to goal and I'll pop by the runners and I'll get a score in the loop, but I'll bring the lads into it. And that's where I was going for most of the year. That it wasn't working for me. It wasn't valued, as you say. So just that last week, and I said, I wish I had done it 6 weeks earlier. I said, I'm just going to go do what I always done, and it's taking a man on and kicking the ball over the bar or creating a goal opportunity with a 1-2.
Because when you think about it, I know hindsight is a great thing, but if they were seeing you in a clutch game coming on to get an important point, they have to see you kicking points, right? They're not bringing you on for that 10 minutes to throw the ball around, right?
Yeah, 100%.
So, you know?
Yeah, so like, that's.
See,
should have rang you.
Yeah, good stuff out of Bernard there. And how the hell, when you think about it, Bernard Brogan was only ever going to be used as an impact sub. And Bernard Brogan is trying to be a team player as an impact sub. That's not what an impact sub does. An impact sub comes on and does something probably special, like he's perfectly capable of. So in hindsight, he came at his last year all wrong.
Yeah.
Do you agree?
Because when you're a manager on the sideline and you're looking behind you to see what options you have, you want somebody who's going to come on and change the game.
Yeah.
Not somebody who's going to come on and just be there.
Yeah, be there and lay a ball off. Like Bernard Brogan can kick points from all angles. If you need him with 5-10 minutes to go, you need to see him kicking scores from all angles in training, not laying the ball off and being a team player. Do you get me? Like, I mean, if you're looking for a start in a certain role, like I joked with Bernard that, like, I mean, he should have rang me before and you would have told him. Seriously though, like, don't. You need a certain role this year. What's that role going to be? Analyse that, get that clear in your head. Now go do what you need to do to get that 10 minutes every day.
It's interesting that he would fall into that mentality, because did anybody ever tell him that you're too greedy? Like, after all he's done for Dublin, like, nobody would have said that.
Well, before Pat Gilroy, he would have been too greedy, yeah.
Yeah, well, like, you know, but it's interesting, like, if you think of the Kieran Kilkenny one that we talked about on Monday, when he was sort of being the team player, obviously in class as well, but not going and winning the game for them. Just, I wonder, it's a strength and a weakness of Jim Gavin that players seem to sort of think, I just need to do everything for the team here.
Yeah, true. Other than Connolly, and to a lesser extent Paul Mannion might go for a score, you know what I mean, a score from a pretty hard angle.
Yeah,
the rest of them seem to just tap over scores that any of the three of us could tap over. Don't mean that in any kind of like, maybe me, not
no offense
sake. Alright boys, we're going to continue on here, because governance of county boards is a hot topic at the moment. It's something definitely we've spoken about on the show for a long while. We had Director General Tom Ryan. He was in on the show in February. And I put it to him that they need to restructure the county boards.
The game has moved into a professional era, right? So county boards now are like mini football clubs in their own right. They're little businesses. They have to worry about their brands, their marketing, fundraising. They're businesses. Yeah. They've got amateurs running them. People with no business background would just get voted in through politics, GAA politics, right? So Dublin's structure, they have that same politics. They have a chairman voted in, but he doesn't run the business side. They have a CEO to do that. No other county can afford that CEO. I'm just wondering what your thoughts on this are. That if the GEA put a CEO in every 32 county and used the structure Dublin have with business background that has a proven record of running businesses, because that's what county boards are now. We're not in the dark ages of this being just land there and it all looks, see what we did last year and just continued on, which there is a culture of. It would cost, say, $100,000 a year. Would that be a going rate? I'm not sure. In and around that, it would be 3.2 million at a cost to the GAA. I was reading in 2017 you had to pay $15 million to actually...
There's a few of them already.
If you were to fund them, right, because a lot of counties can't afford them. If you were to fund them...
There's about 20 of them already, Colin.
20 full-time CEOs running county boards?
Yeah, there is, yeah.
Right, I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah, there is, yeah. Now, when you talk about business backgrounds and so on, you know, I can't attest to that, but there are, there's about 20 full-time... whether they're designated as
they're
CEOs,
county
or
secretaries. That's different. Yeah. That's different, because I know county secretaries, and they don't have a business background at all. They were voted in by the usual politics, and they just happen to be in that job, and that's a paid job. Some of them are. They definitely weren't interviewed for that job as regards your business background or your ability to run a business. I don't think that's the criteria that was used.
I'd be the last person too to kind of ascribe. There's more and more important aspects to running a county than running it as a business.
But there is a huge business element to it now. Is the point I'm making? And I was reading in 2017 that at the end of every year, you have to bail out loads of county boards that have gone over too much expenses. I think it was 15 million in 2017. 15 million in 2017, different payments to county boards for overruns of costs and stuff like that. Am I right on that figure?
You mightn't be, dig that out again there. I know we'd pay about 10, 12 million to county boards every year, but it's not based on...
All right, so here it is. Sorry, just to quote. Just under 15 million of the total was distributed by the GAA Central Council in 2017 to counties and clubs to underwrite their operating costs and to defray the cost of their participation in various competitions.
Exactly, yeah, but it's not particularly because of something went wrong somewhere. That's just what we do. You just pay that out.
This is the point I'm making. Yeah. So if you spent maybe 3.2 million to put in a full-time CEO with a business background and use the Dublin model, you're saving yourselves 12 million there. If they can actually balance those books, run things efficiently and have a marketing department
There's a funny little thing in there though. Like when you talk about balancing the books and business people running counties and so on, only two or three counties in 2018 actually ran at a loss. Most of them broke even or better. And I won't quote names or I won't name who they are, but have a look and see, and you might be surprised at one or two of them. Yeah, you might be. I'm not really that thrilled about the... I understand the sentiment, and I understand, like... That's a clinical enough word to use.
Okay, but, like, for example, you still keep your structure.
Yeah.
Like, your chairman, and they do all the fixtures, and you're not stepping on there. Look, the Dublin model is there. Yeah. So, like, you can actually organise it better and run loads of different departments now, and it's a brand. And if you don't, like... get your brand in space, you're not going to fundraise, you're not going to get the sponsorship in. Dublin, for example, now I know they're on a different level of regards attraction for sponsors, but like they have something like 16. Like other counties are getting fellas, part-time amateurs on the road to ask the local businessman down the road. There's better ways of doing this, is the point I make, if they had a full-time fella running it.
The way we've tried to do it, look... As I said, about 20 counties have a full-time person.
That's a secretary now. It's not what I'm talking about.
I know, but about four or five would have, as well as that, would have a commercial manager, if you like, somebody who's specifically charged with doing the things you're talking about in terms of getting in sponsorship and looking at... And the mistake, I think, that counties and ourselves maybe in the past would have made and clubs would make too a little bit is the sponsorship is not just about asking somebody for something at the start of the year or at the start of 3 years. You've got to kind of look after those people and you've got to cultivate them and mind them and make sure that the only conversation you're having with them is not about, can I have a cheque, please? So four or five counties have gotten into that over the course of the last couple of years. They are getting help from ourselves. But the way we've kind of gone on up to now is trying to provide that help to people centrally from our marketing department, because you could also argue come the other way around, like if you have 32 of those around the country, perhaps you're getting into duplication as well, and perhaps you're getting into less than optimum utilisation of resources. And is like, would you be better off putting that money that you're talking about, if we had that discretionary extra money, would you be better off putting that into coaching?
Didn't really get the response I wanted there from Tom Ryan, if we're being honest, lads. Jesus Christ, this is, sometimes I think they're so reactive, and now because of all the controversies in county boards, and there could be danger of county boards actually going so bloody bankrupt because they don't have professionals running them. And I was just reading today actually in the Examiner, Pat Carney, who was reappointed as the Galway County Board Chairman, he says the GAA is unrecognisable for what it was 5 years ago. Club and county officers are being asked to be experts in every field, to know how to deal with every situation. Situations that we are probably not trained in, haven't expertise in, or haven't the time for. Isn't that incredible? Like, how much more can they say? Tom Ryan isn't even acknowledging that this is an issue.
I don't think the interview with Tom aged particularly well.
No.
I mean, I can't remember exactly. I think it was around February time when he was in. Yeah. So we're talking at a time when there are multiple county boards. I'd say close to crisis at the moment. We're talking about Mayo, Galway. There's another story this week about the wrong fingers being being given to the Clare County Board meeting about administration costs or something like that. So
obviously the Cork County Board misrepresented their loss.
That's the one that was earlier on this week. So it hasn't aged particularly well, because I remember like Tom Ryan during that interview was mentioning about how they help out county boards, but he wasn't saying that it was in suggestion that they were helping them out because they were in crisis. Well, we're talking at a time where there are multiple county boards in financial crisis.
But how can the Director General brush that off, that that's not a big deal, when someone just presenting a show or anyone talking on a show can see that this is coming down the tracks?
Yeah.
He just doesn't seem like it's, and this is the accusation often with the administrators in Croke Park, that they bury their head in the sand until it becomes so blatantly obvious that they have to bloody do something.
It was painful, you know, when he said there's 20 CEOs in counties, and you were like, really? Yeah. And I was thinking, Jesus, really? And then it ended up county secretaries, it was like one of those moments you say out loud, for fuck's sake, come on. And I think even 20 wouldn't be enough.
I think he actually insulted my intelligence by trying to pawn that off. Yeah. Like, there's 20 CEOs. There's not. There's secretary. Oh, Lord, don't talk to me. Right, we'll move off that anyways, because if you want to listen to that interview from back in February, it's definitely there. Just search Tom Ryan and the GAR. Last one for part one, lads, is we did a charity show up in Errigal Kieron back in April, and I spoke to Mickey Hart. It was just not long after they beat Dublin in the league. Have a listen to this.
The running game is really exciting when you come up against a team that are a bit tactically not at it, and you're able to run through them, and it's exciting and great to watch. Mm. And then when you play a team that is clued in and it can become a stalemate, you know, in those kind of games where it's thrown off and boring, it must have been your pulse going watching Tyrone beat Dublin playing that style of football that night in Croke Park. Do you know what I mean? It was like, come on, I know you like the running game and the games of chess, but that must have really been like, Jesus, that was great.
Well, there's no doubt it was good to watch. It certainly was. we've been close to Dublin before. A couple of years ago, we had Dublin on the ropes, and we lost Tiernan McCann to the ridiculous so-called black card. We lost Mark Bradley. You know, we lost those men. We were in a 5-point lead in that game. And in fact, we'd have won the game by a point, only for Joe to give them a free for nothing. You know?
Come here. Some people would say you're stubborn. Is he stubborn? Would you say you're stubborn?
Some people say you're eccentric. And the rest don't know him.
Would you be stubborn to have changed the style because people were telling you to change the style?
What do you think?
I'm doing the interview. Is he stubborn or not?
That's a negative word. I wouldn't choose that word. I'd say I'm principled.
Okay.
You know?
Okay. Mickey Hart is a funny sort of character. When he's nice and relaxed there in front of his home club, you can get a bit of crack out of him. Like, I mean, me and him are such different people, but I think he enjoys a little bit of crack as well. And by God, he enjoyed beating Dublin that day, because the smile on his face while he was answering those questions.
Yeah,
he still didn't admit he was stubborn, though.
Yeah,
that's him being stubborn.
He's principled.
Which has been in senior intercounty dressing room for 17 years as well. So he's a little bit more similar to you than you might.
He's dealt with a lot of characters up there too. I mean, and when you talk to Owen Mulligan, like, some of the stuff they would have got up to when they were winning All Irelands. And Mickey would have, you know, he would have been very strict with them, but there would have been no question if they stepped out of line, you're gone. That wasn't the way Mickey Hart operated. And you never really heard too much controversy coming out of Tyrone. It was kept kind of in-house.
Yeah. Do you know with some managers, like, I think in the Premier League, it's like they get older and they want to win their way to prove a point. Like, you know, it's not even that they think it's the best way. But I think with Mickey Hart, it's more that he's just too afraid to open up nowadays, like, and thinks this is the best to get out of Tyrone, when he watches like Tyrone do that against Dublin and Croke Park.
Yeah, I think with the advance mark next year, you want to watch this space for the likes of Tyrone with McShane. It's unfortunate Matty Donnelly won't be around, but you have Dara Canavan in the mix. I think Tyrone, I know they kind of bottled it a little bit this year after the Donegal game, you know, the style of play. but have two, use both of them and have Donegal thinking, right, well, they're going to come with this good diagonal ball to McShane, but let's come to Donegal with more of a running game. You know, I think they were too obvious. They went from one extreme to being blatantly obvious the other way. Mm. And two games before Donegal, they hammered Derry and Antrim and with the same style of play. And Donegal were just waiting, to use a cliche, in the long grass for them. But I think next year they will evolve it and be a little bit more direct.
I know the offensive mark is going to be different next year than it was this year. But you mentioned to him about the offensive mark for Tyrone. And rather than focusing on how it might help them in attack, he was more concerned about like how problematic it's going to be for the defenders.
Ask Colin about that mentality.
Yeah, you see, Ulster says no. I don't have as much faith in Mickey Hart kind of transitioning to a new style of play for Tyrone as Edie, because I think he tried it a bit last year, then he was spooked by Donegal, and then he just went back to basics again. And I think that's just his principal style or his stubborn style, whatever you want to call it. And I think he's going to be more thinking about how do I counteract the offensive mark this year in terms of defence, as opposed to how can I exploit it in terms of attack, which was the other way. But that's just going on.
If they didn't have Cottle McShane, I would say you have a point. But I think he was a remember the catch against Galloway in the league up in Omagh. Like, this lad is a machine.
But you know, the annoying thing here is that was an advantage anyway. He didn't need to win a free kick out of it. Kick the ball into Cahill McShane 20 yards out. That's as good of an advantage or as good of encouragement as you should need.
Yeah.
You know, but he didn't. I don't know. Again, I still think he might be thinking, geez, I don't want Michael Murphy and Paddy McBurtry to have all that space. Like, you know, and win a handy free.
Okay, stop your depressing me now. We'll leave it at that. Okay, we'll take a break and we'll come back in part two.
I'd never be allowed to go off and eat a heap of shite like him and go off a slob or whatever. Like, I was always doing a bit.
All I remember is I thought I was going to get clobbered on the way in there. I threw the ball up in there. I don't know. It was pure luck, no, in fairness. Pure luck. But it's fucking bullshit, as you see yourselves.
All right, welcome back to the best of GAA in 2019, brought to you by the GAR. We can't have a best of, and this is the only exception I made, the only pundit that we're using here without our most popular pundit, and that is Cheddar Plunkett, far and away. So Cheddar is at his absolute best when he's talking about weaker hurling counties and what the GAA could do to help them out. So have a listen to this.
I just don't see it, Woolly, and I'm just going to stop talking about this anymore. And if you ask me this question anymore, I'm going to refuse to answer it, because I'm just sickened by the lack of interest in GAA headquarters and GAA Croke Park and Leinster councils and all of these organisations, which have the responsibility and the accountability to get these things organised and worked. And just throwing some coaches into a county is insufficient. It's not enough, because the top counties are actually doing that already and more. So how are you going to close the gap? You need to sprint. I've used this example a number of times. These counties need to sprint while the other teams are jogging along to catch up in them.
Yeah.
And we're not anywhere near that at the
moment.
You need
to be doubling down, giving them way extra money and coaching and expertise.
And I'd say, sorry, Willie, for cutting across you. I will say this clearly as well. If those counties and those county boards and those county supporters and teams and clubs and all of that are not interested in doing this, I wouldn't give them any money. I think the counties themselves have to show that, you know, their own ambitions and their own vision for hurling in that county first before I'd get in behind it. But I think if John Horne got a group together to look, I know he has a group already together, but I'm not too sure of their terms of reference, and I'm not too sure if it's refined and really focused on this part. But I think it needs to be. And I think if somebody came up with the project plan for that, overseen by serious, serious people, I'm really talking about project managers to look at something like this with the experience of delivering a sports programme like this, and go around the world. I was involved in Leash, I looked at a lot of things. I looked at the Welsh Rugby Union, I looked at New Zealand Rugby Union, I looked at Canadian hockey and all those other sports. What do they do to really increase the numbers and the quality of their teams? And when you do that, you can come back with certainly a really good template of what would work in every counties and in each of these counties. And then you can actually build a specific for each county, because each county is different. You can't come with the same plan for every county. You need to target it towards the county. And it's that level of detail is needed. And I think that's what Colm is referring to. If you had that and you were able to stay at that level of competitiveness and learn in that in competitive environment, then I think Carlo hurling would hold its own. Would hold its own at the very least. Is Isla looking to be as competitive? Nobody's saying here Carlo's going to win an All Ireland in the next 3 or 4 years. Is Isla looking to say is this team can compete with you know the Kennys or the Dublins or whoever it is or the Wexfords, and over a period of years and over that time we'll keep pushing ourselves here to try and reach the top.
Yeah, no, exactly. And like, I mean, this is the thing, Cheddar. Like, you're the only pundit I hear constantly banging that drum. I don't think enough of the high profile ones, because Dublin is the very obvious example. 15 years ago, Dublin were competing with Laois and they were competing with Antrim, and they were losing a lot of the time, Laois and Antrim, at that level. And look at them now, you know, and that's because of investment. That's because of a plan, and that's because there was money put in there. Like, I don't understand how the hurling pundits don't rage against this. Because we're talking about 9 serious teams, and you have an opportunity with the Joe McDonagh Cup teams, because they are traditional hurling counties as well, to get them up to a 14 All-Ireland team championship. How great would that be? 2 groups of 7 in the summer, and here, there you are. Then you have your lower tiers, and like I said about the lower tiers, with respect, a lot of them are football counties, and the idea that to try and get hurling is very difficult in those counties, but the counties that have hurling tradition, it shouldn't be hard, because it's there in the counties. Like, half of Laois is hurling, the south. You know, it's not like you have to develop that. That's there already.
No, I agree with that. Well, I think that's one of the preconditions. There would have to be a geographic base, you know, to be able to step up to this level. Look, I probably don't have time on this show to tell you how many times I've been around the blocks and the houses and this, the different parts. And what was most disappointing, some key influencer in the GAA that were at a very, very high level would clearly say to me, look, this is not a runner. Laois is not going to close this gap, full stop.
Really?
And, absolutely. And I just, you know...
Even though Dublin did.
Well...
Now, look, they have a population,
well,
I suppose.
Well, if you go back, I can talk at length here about Dublin, because I understand a lot. I made it my business to understand how they got to where they got to. And look, I'd probably throw in another comment that the whole hurling programme in Dublin was probably hijacked by football eventually. But look, that's a different issue. Like, the original funding that went into Dublin set it up. Now, I fully agree with this. Willie, I said before on the show, I work in Dublin. I see hurling just growing at grassroots level in Dublin. And I'm a hurling person, and I would not want to see that change. I think it's simply brilliant what I see going on here. And I would not want that to change. But the template is there of how to do this. And it does cost money. But... you know, some people will say, oh, and I read actually John, it's a huge time for John Horan, because he's come from a games development part of Dublin, and he has certainly served his time in the games promotion of the GAA and deserves where he is. But I see his comment this morning that his volunteerism in Dublin.
I was very disappointed with that.
I thought John was obviously talking out of the side of his mouth in that, because he knows this better than anybody. The setting up of the coaching structure in the clubs in Dublin was principally driven by the 2003 hurling development plan in Dublin. The clubs may be contributing now, but that originally, I don't know, I have the figure somewhere, but it certainly was millions, and I'm talking about 5 or 6 million over a number of years early on, and then that was obviously pared down to 1 million a year or something like that. Now it's not as much now. And look, that's something like 60 or 70 full-time coaches in clubs in Dublin, clubs and schools in Dublin, overseen by 4 or 5 games managers. I fully applaud that. I think it's brilliant, and I think it's really needed in Dublin, and I probably would like to see that with more focus now for hurling in Dublin, to get in behind the Dublin senior hurling team at the minute, to make sure that whatever performance improvements they make and whatever success they have is underpinned by a really, really good system of production of quality players for the future for Dublin. Why can't that very same template targeted towards the Carlos and the Westmeads and the Laois and Offaly's of this world now be put in place for those counties with sufficient funding? Yeah. But I'd give no funding to any county if I didn't think that the development plan for that county was innovative and comprehensive enough to develop this. And just talking about coaches and that is totally insufficient. And I've heard it being spoken about Offaly. Totally insufficient for Offaly. You are in such a state now in some of these counties. parties, and the competition from other sports is such that you need to look at a complete lifestyle management of underage hurling in those counties, and it is very, very comprehensive, and anything less than that is not enough, because Kilkenny, Tipperary and all the other counties are actually doing more. How the hell do you think you're going to catch up in them by just doing something a little bit less? It might be more than you're doing at the minute. It is not enough.
Yeah, so if the GEA ever wanted to develop hurling in the Joe McDonagh Cup counties, because we're not going to, you know, like we said in the piece, think that it can happen with every, it's not going to happen in Derry, or, you know, maybe in Derry, but it's not really a traditional hurling county, or Tyrone or Cavan or all these counties. But the Joe McDonagh Cup counties are traditional hurling counties, and they have lots of hurling in them. Why would they not employ Cheddar Plunkett as a project manager for hurling development and put a plan in place and put money into it? And we'll have maybe a 15, 16 team All-Ireland in hurling. Wouldn't that be fantastic?
Yeah, a couple of things I really liked. I could listen to Cheddar all day for a start, and I'm not even a hurling man, but a couple of things I liked was that he didn't advocate like a one-size-fits-all approach, basically. So like, just because one plan works for one county, just the assumption that it's going to work for another is completely wrong. Structure might be wrong. You know, structure might be good in one county, but the quality of coaching might be poor, vice versa. So you can't just go in with the same plan. And the other thing was, just trying to think, that the other thing was just... it actually kind of stood out to me that, sorry, he said that no funding will be given to any county if their development plan is not innovative or progressive enough. So I think that's really kind of encouraging to say as well. But just goes back to, like, as you said, can you just hire Cheddar as a project manager for hurling development and solve all problems?
The GEA administrator high up coming telling him that, you know, Leash are never going to bridge that gap. You know what I mean? It's not a terrible attitude to say. It's so discouraging for a traditional county where the south of Leash is hurling and the north would be football predominantly. And they're telling Leash that you can never bridge the gap. What's the point? You know what I mean? And that was a I couldn't believe he said that. But we'll move on here, lads, because another Dublin player retired this year. See, the way we get them all when they retire, lads, isn't it? So Bernard Brogan was in. Paul Flynn was in as well. When they get out of the media manager in Dublin, his grasp, it'll be interesting to see whether he's in there with Desi Farrell. Surely Desi will get rid of that lad. He was a friend of Jim Gavin's. Like, I mean, he's full of his own importance going around the place there in his shorts. Imagine a media manager out on the field in a pair of shorts. Like, who wants this lad around? Honestly, if you're not a good friend of his and an ex-army colleague of his, Desi Farrell, surely he'll just say, buddy, you're not as important as you think you are. Now, go away.
It depends, you know, what way Desi Farrell wants to do it. Like, does he want to keep a closed shop? Then obviously this media manager is the man to do it, because he doesn't manage anything.
On the day of a match, buddy, go in and sit in the stand now. What are you doing in shorts out in the field? You know what I mean? Think about it. Who's going to be interviewing him out there?
Here, you kicked the wife there. You're trying.
Oh, this lad amazes me. Like, I've never come across a fella who's just so important in his own mind. How Jim Gavin entertained him. Anyways, let's move on. Jim's gone, and hopefully that fella will be gone as well. Anyway, Paul Flynn came in, and we had a good chat about how wing forward play changed during his time with Dublin.
Yeah, the kickouts was always one of my strengths growing up, like, you know, my hands. And then when we kind of started adopting that kickout style with Stephen, and I was just, you know, it really worked. But, like, you know, it's not as easy now to kind of to get that space in half forward, you know, because people are more kind of aware of it. You know,
the
zonal defense kind of really kind of mitigates against that. But again, at the same time, at that period of time, I remember even in 2011, that All-Ireland final, Kerry were very aware of it, and I didn't get as many. Now I had a hamstring injury going into it, so I wasn't able to make them long runs, but Kerry were aware of it, and they dropped two players into the zone, so they tried to kind of just to stop that impact, because that was one where we used to build a lot of our attacking plays from, which would get it out to the pockets and then, you know, transition quickly. So that did get you into a game, and ball winning your own ball still is critically important to any inter-county player.
For your own confidence, you're like, I don't need someone to pass me the ball. I'm going to win my own ball from these kickouts. You know, I think that's a great thing. But I was wondering, because in the last maybe 2 years, Cluxton, maybe even 3 years, Dublin have reverted to a much more possession-based game, and Cluxton's not as adventurous with his kickouts. He'd tap it to Johnny Cooper if it's there. You know what I mean? Rather than maybe go for those pockets. And there's obviously reasons for that, because teams are dropping players into it. So, like, I mean, would you find yourself in a game having to adapt, going, right,
well, that's, I'm not getting my guaranteed possessions now. Now I have to try and mix it up a little bit and, you know, get on the ball in a different way.
Yeah, and it probably fed into people not being involved in games as much, you know, and having an impact on your own performance, because that was a strength of mine. And then you're trying to adapt, and, you know, and when you're getting man, like, as well as that in the early doors, when in 11 and 12, I very seldom got man marked. You know, you just have a kind of a half back who would, you know, be attacking, or they would be there, but they wouldn't be man marking you. And then, like, more recently, like, all six forwards get man marked, and then they have a sweeper who'll kind of cover into the space or whatever like that. And that was a different dynamic as well, because you really have to work hard to get on the ball, where it was that a bit easier, bit easier prior to that. So yeah, no, that's how the game evolves, and it'll continue to evolve going into the future as well.
Yeah, is it as enjoyable the game now, where it's kind of disorganised and you're floating around, you're getting a hand pass? Like, I mean, you can't really do anything with that hand pass. You just have to hand pass it off. Whereas your natural game would be to give it inside, or, you know, or do some. You always want to do something on the ball. Is it difficult to kind of come to terms with the fact, right, I'm getting the ball here now, and I'm probably just going to pass it off backwards and then just run around somewhere else? Yes. You know,
I said there recently, like, in 2014 was a really enjoyable year for me, because we played that, like what you're saying.
You were flying it that year, yeah.
But we were playing really good, really expansive football, where we did take risks. We kicked the ball a lot. Of course, we made mistakes, but we always backed ourselves that we'd win the ball back, and then go on the attack again. And we didn't tend to play with a sweeper. We went man to man, and that was really enjoyable. Obviously, like, you know, and obviously for myself, you're right. I would have always liked to get the ball and try kick. I remember, you know, when Alan was playing centre forward and I was winning them kickouts, like, the amount of times that I just catch it and kick it up to where I was, you know. So if
and
I was,
Alan would be breaking across.
And Alan would be there. And, you know, we had such a good relationship. And then when he left, and I might have been a little bit closer to goal, the amount of ball I kicked to Bernard was like, you know, and I look back now on games and I'm saying, that's like, you know, it's crazy how much we used to look for one, or I used to look for him, and it wasn't because I was thinking it. It was that relationship there, and that happens when you play with guys, you know, through the years. You just know what runs they're going to make. He knows, you know, a good forward will know that if I'm going to turn on my right foot, I'm going to look to kick it. I'm not a ball carrier, really. I'm a guy who likes to use the boot, and so he'd be clever enough to be able to feed off that. And Alan was similar, like, but now the game has changed a bit, where, you know, you might be looking up and there's a sweeper there in front of you, so you have to be a little bit more clever about your ball usage. But yeah, that's just part and parcel, I believe, and I know, you know, you have views on this, but I think it's part and parcel of how the game is going to evolve.
Yeah, so that's interesting how Paul Flynn would have had to change his game a little bit as Cluxton changed his kickouts, because he was such a big target for Cluxton. Then players start standing in his way. Mm. He started getting double marked, and Cluxton started going to Johnny Cooper the whole time. So now Paul Flynn is like, Jesus, all my possessions that I'm almost guaranteed in a match, they're gone. How can I change? Do you know what I mean? And it probably did have an impact on, he got the four All-Stars in a row, and then that kind of change came about, and maybe he wasn't as effective a player as he had been.
Yeah, I think teams got more sophisticated with the kickouts, but also then Paul Flynn had won four All-Stars, so then he was
a marked man, yeah.
And then he also mentioned there's a sweeper there as well. So I don't even know how, as a wing forward, you start dealing with being man marked. You've talked about this loads, how, like, you just want the wing back. And Paul Flynn mentioned it, like, you know, normally just a wing back who pisses off the pitch. But now when you're Paul Flynn, it's a very hard thing. And I think, like, one of his better games was the Ireland final replay that he came into midfield, you know, in recent years, and he was class in midfield. Maybe that's what his more natural position became then,
More of a midfielder, and I don't know, he talked about it pretty well there, but at the same time, he has moved on into the GPA now, and he missed a five in a row, which was a huge kind of thing for him to, like, I suppose, did he really miss it in his head? He's got a new job, which is an exciting new job for him, and he wasn't getting in the mix, he just got injured. So, like, I don't know, in a way maybe he enjoyed going to it without that stress that Bernard Brogan had. Am I in the 26? Because I'm sure that was difficult for Berno. We'll move on, lads, because I love a cocky young fella. I was a cocky young fella at a minor and under 21 myself. So one of my favourite interviews this year was from Offaly's up-and-coming forward, Keane Johnson, who's flying it under John Mahan this year. If we can, I don't want to analyse O'Byrne Cup games. Have a listen. This is very good.
They're the kind of standards I set myself. Like, I'd be disappointed with that unless. Like, I know everyone kicks wise, but, like, I practice shooting 4-10, after 10, get a bag of balls, go to pitch on my own. Like, So when it comes to the match, it's just second nature. Like, I'm an inside forward, like, scoring is my job. So everybody else is donkey work to get the ball into me. So when it comes in, I have to produce. I'm a poacher. Like, I do stay close to goals. Like, if anyone sees me chasing someone out the pitch, if I go past 45, all I get is that screaming at me to go back in, because they know I'm no good to out around the middle. So, like, if Rhodes seen me chasing lads in the Iraq line, they'd be delighted. I have to stay as close as possible. And, like, I know it's just working hard and all that, but, like, there's 14 other lads do that. Like, just get me the ball and I'll win the game for it.
Yeah, well, that's a good attitude. I'm sure your teammates love when you tell them to do the donkey work and get the ball into me.
Yeah, there would be, I know if they see me letting a cornerback off the pitch, there'll be a few lads running and shouting, but when I get the ball and stick it in the net, they're all right with it.
I read a good quote from you saying, like, you don't lack confidence, and I think, well, that's a great thing. I read a quote from you talking about pressure, and you said, I know I have the skill to trouble anyone any day I go out. All the pressure is on the person marking me. And you never really thought about it like that. I suppose the pressure should be on the cornerback. Some corner forwards might tie themselves up in not saying, I have to produce, you know, whereas the cornerback should be the one having to quieten down a top class forward.
Yeah, I know. Like, I don't feel any pressure at all. I never get nervous for a game. I'm almost just excited, because it's all about the big day. Like, I love the big day. I love going out to show how good I am. Like, every chance, every final, so many people there, such a big event. Like, I love just showing off my skills. There's no pressure at all. I don't feel it. Like, I know when I go playing for Fermanagh, I'm probably going to have to score 5 or 6 points maybe to get us over. Like, that's just the way it is. Like, nobody's telling me that, but I know that myself, so I don't feel any pressure. Like, I know I'm going to get 5 or 6 chances in the game, and it's just up to me whether I take them or not, and how much work I put in making sure my shooting is on point. So
yeah, that's the thing. Yeah. You've put in a lot of work on your right foot. You're not naturally two-footed, but you I think a bit late in your development you started working on your right.
Yeah, Lord. Like, even when I was young lad, no one ever told me. I came the whole way up. I started playing out roughly under 13, and nobody's ever told me to work on my right foot. It's not good enough really from a coach point of view, but anytime you used to get the ball, it's just left foot. I'm sick of it. And even last year we got beat by Rove by 118-10, and I was looking at Anton and Niall McNamee kicking points off both feet, and I was I need to get up to that level. I set a reminder on my phone, and it was just the score from last year. It was just 118-10, and I went off at 6 o'clock every day. And I'd go out to the side of my house and just kick ball up against the wall for 15 minutes. And I just seen a dramatic improvement. I think I got 4.24 from playing championship this year, and I think got 9 points off my right foot. It mightn't have been the whole difference, but it's just small things like that just make a big difference.
I had a fella tweet me from Sydney. He sent me a direct message actually to the GAA account. He says, I just listened to that interview from Kean Johnson. What's that lad ever done in the game? Clifford is, and all this. And I was like, relax, mate. He's a cocky young fellow. What's wrong with that? He's just won a county final for his own club. He'd played under 20. He's shooting the lights out underage. Now he'll play senior next year. Cockiness is all relative. You don't need to have won an All-Ireland to be cocky. I thought his attitude was fantastic, and you don't get that anymore. And it's maybe a little bit over the top, where I'm sure his teammates know what he's like. The others do the donkey work to get me the ball, but they do. And I'll
win the game for you. What a quote.
I will get you the ball if you're that good. I've no problem giving you the ball. You know what I mean? That's every team needs. That's Ronaldo. That's what we talk about on the show. He thinks the others do the donkey work for him.
Yeah. Messi, and he's well able to carry it
off. Maybe not Messi with Xavi and Iniesta, but Ronaldo would think it no matter who he plays with. But I don't see a problem with that at all, lads. And then when he talked about setting the alarm with the score from last year's county final, going out and kicking the ball against the wall, he's cocky, but he works hard. So I'll take cockiness and hard work over, something dull any day.
Same for Ronaldo, he worked harder than anybody. I don't get what it's, especially in Ireland.
People hate it. GAA people hate that kind of stuff.
You probably know people in your clubs as well who are class coming through, and people are reluctant to say that they're good because they don't want them to get ahead of themselves, and they'll cut them down, especially if we're talking behind their back and stuff. Oh, that lad, he's not that good. It's unbelievable. Austin Gleeson, remember the goal he scored was against Cork? One of the best goals I've ever seen in hurling, and he got grief for it because he didn't pass it off. He did something amazing that's going to be shown in highlights reels forever.
Yeah,
and it's just the attitude. Then when he lost the final, people couldn't wait to take him down to size. I do not know what it is. Kean Johnson's a match winner. Like, all these players that we're talking about are match winners. Why can't they just admit that as well?
Yeah. I can't wait to see him playing next year. I can't wait to see him playing, kick a few scores and say, there's no big deal about that. That's my job.
Yeah.
Like, the back is the one. That was another great quote from a young fella. I don't feel pressure. The pressure's on the defender, yeah, not on me. Where in my head, the pressure is more on the star forward to produce. But no, when you think about it, the defender should be saying, how am I going to stop him? Yeah. Not the forward kind of being worried, can I produce on the big day? You know, but it's true. And I've played in the forwards. Of course, a forward's going to be a little bit concerned. Am I going to produce it? He doesn't seem to be. I thought that was incredible stuff. The back's the one under pressure. I'm not under pressure. Yeah. I practiced to score.
I was hoping you were going to say that you got a text message when you were in Sydney and said, geez, I love listening to that young fella. How positive he is. How confident he is in his own ability. Do you know what I mean? When he's saying stuff like, I'll win the game for us. Love the big day. I love showing people how good I am. And like, you can't have a tactic with Kean Johnson. You can't say to a fit cornerback, you run him up and down all day, you know, just tire him out. He's just not going to chase you. And he's adamant about that. He's like, if the manager is telling him in the dressing room, now, number 15 works as hard as number 2. Not for Kean Johnson. Do you know what I mean? He let them wander to the 45 and that'd be it. He's there to score points, as he said. I think he said something like, I know I'm expected to score 5 or 6 points today, and he's very comfortable with that pressure. It's so rare and so refreshing to hear that attitude.
Very rare and very refreshing. You're dead right. Okay, brilliant stuff from Kean there. We'll be back in part 3.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you brought that up now, because there's no such thing as a media ban. We don't have a media ban.
Ah, you do?
No, we don't. But you didn't
let Shamey talk at a Hurley launch one day.
Yeah, but hold on a second now. He was at a Hurley launch, you know.
Yeah.
You know,
there's a media ban if he can't talk at that.
Absolutely not. I think you guys need to do your job. Don't depend on us guys for quotes, you know.
Okay.
Earn your living like the rest of us.
But if he's at a media day and he says to the media that I'm not allowed to talk, then he's obviously on a ban.
Well, I think he's carrying a mixed message.
All right, welcome back. So David Clifford was on the show. He's not quite as cocky as Kean Johnson, but he did give us a little bit of an insight into what he works on the most. So have a listen.
I suppose I do a lot of kicking.
Kicking for scores or just in general?
A lot of kicking for scores, a lot of just ball striking. I suppose one thing, if it's going to let me down, is probably just not getting a good strike and a shot, maybe a rushing a shot or something. So just trying to, I suppose something I really worked on this year is just trying to, like, if you can imagine, kind of slow down in that 1 or 2 seconds and just make sure your strike. I think it's funny enough, it was actually Barry John Keane who played corner forward with Kerry for about the last 8 or 10 years. He just said it to me a few times that, like, you know, you're trying to nearly kick the paint off the ball rather than just I suppose concentrating on your strike and then where it's going will probably look after itself. You know, so it's just a big thing I work on is just trying to get consistent ball striking, I suppose. So,
did you always have the left and right, or did you have to work
no,
hard?
I didn't, big time, I didn't. I suppose I was very left-footed. You'd hear the call of watches left, probably, and stuff in under 14 and 16 games and stuff. So I suppose that probably something itself that makes you want to say, right, I'm going to prove these fellas wrong. And, well, it's fairly simple. Like, you need to have both legs.
You won't survive.
Yeah, you won't survive, exactly. No. Like, yeah.
So that's important. But, like, I mean, you know, that's it. And would Morris talk to you about kicking technique, or, you know, or how would he kind of manage the coaching?
Yeah, he would. I suppose Morris is excellent. Like, at he kind of knows when he needs to say something to him and he needs to kind of leave you alone. So yeah, Morris always talks about the black spot. So it's just going over the bar isn't good enough for Morris a lot of the time. It's black spot. So.
I thought that was an interesting comment from David Clifford. What's going to let me down is not getting a good strike on a shot or rushing a shot. And straight away, what jumped to me was the All-Ireland final first game where he had 2 or 3 chances early and he snatched at them and they were on his left. Do you know what I mean? And I think maybe because of the pressure of an All-Ireland final, he rushed them or didn't get a good strike on them. And it was just like, when I saw him doing that, it reminded me of what he had said back earlier in the year of what he tries to work on. Obviously in the replay, they were going over an awful lot easier.
Yeah, and so unlike David Clifford, because it seems like every time he strikes it, he hits it perfectly. And I remember wondering, is this because it's David Clifford that we're rating too highly already? But just thinking, for God's sake, he should be putting those over.
Yeah.
Do you know when
I was rooting for him in that first All-Ireland because I was thinking in my head, Jesus, the pressure he's under now, he's first All-Ireland, he's so young. Mm. So when he missed the first two, I was not a Kerry supporter, but I was actually really disappointed for him. I was like, geez, I hope things go well for him.
But he didn't let it get to him. And what I thought actually when he said that as well was watching him in the club championship, particularly afterwards, and obviously he's not playing against the same calibre defenders or, you know, the same quality of team, whatever. But when David Clifford takes an extra solo, it always seems to be a beneficial thing. Do you know what I mean? Like he might have a shot on 30 yards out, then because of how long his stride is, one extra solo, he's eating up the yards towards goal and he's tapping it in. Yeah. Whereas somebody else, you might say, oh, you've taken too much out of it. Just like, it sounds ridiculous to say, but sometimes it feels like time goes a little slower for David Clifford. He has that bit more time than everybody else. And just on the All-Ireland final, while it didn't go from the start, he didn't let that get to him, which is a huge sign of his mentality.
Yeah, but he's a battler. Future. Like, I mean, he's a warrior. He's a tough bit of stuff. Yeah. Like, I mean, I think he's very strong. So a few wides wouldn't bother him. He battled his way to a solid performance in that All-Ireland when it could have all fallen apart for him after a few.
If solid for his standards, good for anybody else.
Yeah. And then in the replay, he was so much better.
Smart to deceive David Goff as well and get Johnny Cooper sent off.
That was so obviously a free out, lads, wasn't it? Poor Johnny Cooper. All right, Alan Brogan made a few guest appearances on the show this year. The first one, first appearance he made, he was explaining how he switched to corner forward in 2002. When it could all have been so different.
I went into Dublin panel in 2001 when Tommy Carr was in charge, and he was only 18 at the time, but he was looking at me as a wing back.
Because you're a wing back as a minor, right?
Wing back in the minors, yeah. So the following year, I wasn't on the championship the championship panel that year. Myself and Barry Cahill went to New York for the summer. But the following year, I came in and we were out training in Nave Baroque, and I was a cornerback, and Mick Casey, Paul Casey's brother, was a cornerback as well. And we were the last two left on the team. So Tommy said, he went as a forward for the first half and then we swapped and I went as a forward for the second half. And in the second half, I might have kicked 1-2 or maybe 4 points. And we were playing Clare the next day in Nave Baroque, and Tommy put me in corner forward. I got 4 points that day as a corner forward, and ever since then, thank God, I never ended up back in the backs again.
No, and you're like,
it would have been no good. I wouldn't have made it as a back.
So Alan Brogan as a corner back, lads, how about that? That would have been funny, wouldn't it? Imagine like an all-surround. Jeez, he was never as good as the father, you know. It's unfortunate, you know, but look, he tried his best there, but he wasn't tight enough or physical enough.
First of all, like, how was Alan Brogan one of the last two to be picked on any team for a start?
Yeah, true.
And then how did anybody think that Alan Brogan was a corner back, including Alan Brogan himself?
Yeah.
You know, is Alan the oldest of the... Because Bernard Senior was a midfielder, right?
So Alan's the oldest son. Yeah.
So they weren't identified as going to be the top forwards from a long way out. But I just can't imagine anybody looking at Alan Brogan thinking this guy would make a good cornerback or even a wingback.
See, he played wingback as a minor, so that's where he was put in that category. But he was bombing up the field, and like, he scored a great goal in the All-Ireland semi-final minor against Down. I think they might have lost it, but it was a brilliant individual goal. And I was like, that man's a forward here. So then he's brought in on the panel and he's like the last two picked for training. Ah, look, well, we'll give you both a go in cornerback and corner. It's mad, isn't it?
Scary.
That year, 2002, Dublin won the Leinster for the first time. And I think Alan deserved an All-Star that year. He was outstanding right throughout the Leinster Championship.
But how many Alan Brogans are there who never got to play in corner forward or play half forward?
Just on a high stool saying, oh, that was me.
They've been told to play back the whole life.
Imagine he played corner back that morning, got clean and go, ah, look, this isn't for me.
Yeah. You know, take a pull or something.
And then Bernard saw that Alan didn't make it, so he's like, that's not going to happen for me.
Yeah. Bernard's sort of like, ah, here, listen, there was a local drug dealer.
I'm a worse corner back than him.
All right, so Patrick Horgan was on the show. Cork lost the All-Ireland quarter final this year, lads, and Patrick Horgan still got nominated for Player of the Year. That'll tell you how absolutely unbelievably brilliant he was this year. Here he is, like Clifford. I don't know whether I'm edging towards asking these lads what to practice on in all the interviews. Am I becoming a one-trick pony? Here he is explaining what he works on.
I actually don't practice really much, only like when I go proper training session, like when I'm warm, I'll get into that. It's just like I do a lot of visualization and visualizing the positions I'll be in. So I don't know, does that work or whatever, but I tick a box by doing it anyway.
So you like to make that run out under the stand and then go put it over your shoulder, left-handed, back over the bar. Is that a trademark?
Just visualise doing that.
Yeah,
I visualise doing that a lot.
And it's running around the 45 usually you're shooting from there, isn't it?
Yeah. Diagonal run out and
and over the shoulder.
Yeah, practicing in general is just striking ball on the run.
Is that over the shoulder one? I'm sure you have to practice because I don't know how you generate the power because there's not much backlift. You know, it's obviously all in the wrist there.
Yeah, it's I just keep doing it until it's a normal strike. Like
right,
I try to practice it so much that if I'm on the front foot, it doesn't feel as comfortable as I do
on the back foot.
Yeah,
because you can't be blocked on the back foot, right?
Well,
it's difficult.
It's hard. Yeah, there is fellas can do it though. To be fair, so.
I was in. I always say this on the show. I was at the Munster final with yourselves in Cork, and I couldn't believe the amount of a boy, hoggy boy. That's all I could hear in the stand. Like Harnedy could make a catch, or Cadigan, or whoever it was, and it's just well done. But when you get the ball, the crowd is rising, and it's a boy, hoggy boy. Are you aware that you're
I actually not, to be fair. It's the first I've heard of it.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, maybe it was just a section I was in. Maybe it was...
I hear a lot of songs with Harnedy.
Really?
They have a few songs on offer the champ, the boys behind the goal. We get a good laugh off them, actually.
So, lads, I don't want to analyse this too much for you two imbeciles when it comes to hurling, but over the shoulder is very technically very difficult to do. It's very difficult to generate the power. And as Brian Carroll said on Monday, I didn't notice, he actually uses a very, very heavy hurl.
So, correct.
Correct. Yeah. So imagine
wider
trying
boss,
to...
Did he say wider boss as well?
Yeah. So, like, I mean, what? And then we had Cottle Barrett on the show last week saying he's impossible to block down because when you go off the back foot, obviously you can't tackle the man. It's very hard to reach your hurl in and get the block on. So, like, I mean, he practices so much, he visualises it so much that it's just normal for him. And it's like a normal... I thought it was crazy when he said if he's actually planting his 2 feet... it feels more awkward than when he's going off the back foot. Yeah. Mad stuff.
And not to blow smoke up yours or the GA yours, but this was an amazing interview, probably one of my favourites.
Really?
Yeah, it was really good. He just, now mostly because of him. But he came across really well.
He did, likable too, didn't he?
And like just so open as well and talking about like what he's thinking.
Just very relaxed about talking about. He reminded me a little bit, almost, you know, sometimes I feel rugby players are a lot more comfortable just talking about tactics and, you know, Rory Grugan was very good on the show during the year. Just talk about it. What's the big deal? You know, like Patrick Horgan there, just going through exactly what he works on. And like, listen, you can't block him down anyway, so he might as well tell you.
So that's it. Like, you have to be that level, like, you know, that level of talent to not care about what you're talking about. Like, I'd be a bit more cagey or giving anything away because I have one thing maybe.
Very strong right foot, but I've no left foot.
Yeah. Well, what would I tell you? Like, you know, otherwise you'd be marked forever.
Yeah. So no, that was really good stuff. And plus he played a little bit innocent when I said to him about the crowd going, a boy, hoggy boy. I can't believe he never heard that before.
He's been very modest there.
Has to be, because the whole stand was shouting it. Like, I mean, he runs out to the wing, right, under the stand towards 45, like I was saying to him. And he hasn't got the ball because his touch is just so sensational. The minute he's running out and you can see he's coming out to collect this ball, everyone in the stand stands up.
Yeah.
To just know what's coming. And then it's over the bar, flick of the wrist. A boy, hoggy boy.
It's not just Cork fans cheering him at this stage. It's a national appreciation society.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, we're going to leave you with this one, lads. So Ger Lochnan, we know Ger Lochnan, he's not shy when he wants to give some criticism, but he called his own count the Clare hurlers gutless this year, and our own Cheddar, well, he wasn't having any of it.
I wanted to talk about Ger for a minute, first of all, because Ger made a point about Clare players being gutless, and he was talking about his own county and his own neighbours here being gutless. I'm old enough to remember the Clare team of the 70s that Ger played on. They won two national leagues in 77-78. They were hammered by Limerick in the championship in 74. They were beaten by Cork in the Munster final 77-78. They were hammered again by Limerick 2 or 3 years later. There was obviously no print media around at the time, and certainly the print journalists no social media around at the time, and the print journalists at that time had a massive amount of respect for players, and that type of commentary didn't happen. And I do remember, and I stand corrected in this, Ger a year or two speaking about that 70s team, and you know, he spoke really eloquently about them. Now he seems to have a very different view about the current Clare team, who have won an All-Ireland, won a National League, and, you know, are working really, really hard. I think the performance of Clare this year had nothing to do with gutlessness, and throwing away that sort of remark was irresponsible, to be honest with you. And you certainly cannot throw it away unless you can back up yourself in your own career that it didn't happen to me.
Cheddar versus Loughnan in a no-holes-barred fight to the death. Great debate.
The next great debate is wow. Just thinking, yeah.
We just ding ding ding. We've got a potential match for the great debate.
You're like Patrick Horgan, so cocky, just giving away all the ideas. Doesn't matter, we get another one.
That's fantastic. I know Cheddar was very good there. In fairness, sometimes I think, you know, Ger Loughnan, he says a lot of stuff I don't think he means. He just wants a reaction out of it or whatever. Clare hurlers don't seem to pay any attention to him. But Cheddar wasn't having any of it anyways. Right. That's it, lads. That's it for 2019. Thank you very much, like, without blowing smoke up our arses, but we've had our strongest year since we started. So thanks very, very much for listening, both on the Hurling Show and on the Football Show. We are going to be back on the 2nd of January. We're going to have Ger Brennan in studio and Cheddar in studio and myself and Conan as well. And we're going to preview the All-Ireland Club semi-finals. So we'll talk to you then. Thanks very much for listening. You can say goodbye if you want, lads.
All right, see you later.
Thank you. Happy New Year.
Cut that.
The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power, home of the GA Hour Hurling ACCA.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I should go, and so I opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken. Let it go.